President-elect Joe Biden was in Georgia yesterday to rally support for two Democrats in a runoff race that will determine control of the U.S. Senate.
The power is literally in your hands. Unlike any time in my career, one state can chart the course, not just for the next 4 years, but for the next generation.
President Donald Trump was also in Georgia on Monday to campaign for the Republican senators in that race. He used the rally also to pressure Republicans into supporting his bid to reverse his November loss. Comes ahead of the Electoral College vote count happening in Congress tomorrow, where some Republican lawmakers are expected to object to Biden's wins in swing states. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What's your reaction to Republican lawmakers objecting to the results of the presidential election? How do you see this changing public sentiment around our elections and how they work? And what are you watching for as the Georgia election is underway? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Kathleen Dolan is a distinguished professor of political science at UW-Milwaukee. Kathleen, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you.
Let's start with the Georgia elections. People have been voting for quite a while now. A lot of early voting there, in-person voting today, of course. Remind us what's at stake there.
Well, what's at stake is the determination of which party will control the majority in the Senate, and along with it, the ease with which President Biden will be able to get Congress to institute some of the policies he's proposing.
And it's likely to be a close race from everything we're seeing. There's a good chance we're not going to know who won by bedtime tonight, whatever somebody's bedtime might be.
That's right. There was a record set for the number of early votes that were cast in Georgia, about 3 million votes cast before Election Day, and about 1 million of those were absentee by mail. And Georgia is a state like Wisconsin that doesn't allow for advance processing of vote by mail ballots. So that work began today. And it is unlikely that we will know something definitive tonight, if only because we suspect that the same kinds of concerns that some people raised about the presidential vote in Georgia may follow the Senate election today as well.
We are talking to Kathleen Dolan from UW-Milwaukee, political scientist there, looking at the Senate race in Georgia and then the drama on what's usually a non-dramatic event in Congress tomorrow with the count of Electoral College votes. You can join in with your thoughts and questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And Kathleen, you mentioned still the president and some supporters questioning the outcome of the November election. Talk about this thing tomorrow, usually kind of a routine thing. Some members of the House in the past have done kind of protest challenges that didn't go anywhere. How unusual is tomorrow as this part of the process?
Well, if tomorrow plays out in the way that a number of senators are suggesting it will be an unprecedented event. As you say, in the past, a couple of different times we've had a member of the House argue or object to a particular, you know, reading of the Electoral College votes. Most of those things have never come in the formal written form. They've just, you know, often been sort of like shouting in the chamber. And so we know that the controlling election law here says that we have to have a challenge from a member of the House and the Senate. And we are now up to 13 senators who have said that they will challenge some combination of states' Electoral College vote certifications. It's pretty clear that Arizona, Georgia, and Pennsylvania's votes will be challenged. We have heard mention of two or three other states being challenged, but we are going to have to see what plays out. But whatever plays out, the first moment that a senator raises his or her objection to join a member of the House, we will be in sort of uncharted territory.
But the outcome there to successfully overturn a state certified slate of electors, as I understand it, is both chambers would have to vote to do that. So you've got a Democratic controlled House. That's not going to happen. At least 20, I think, Republican senators have said they're not going to support these challenges. So after a lot of drama, if I have this right, nothing changes, right?
Well, that's right. I mean, it is the case that once an objection is made, the House and the Senate withdraw from a joint session into their own sessions to debate the objections to a particular state's slate. And then each chamber must have a majority vote in favor of accepting an objection. And as you say, we know that that is not going to happen tomorrow. So President-elect Biden will be inaugurated on January 20th. But tomorrow has two purposes. It is an attempt by Republicans who support President Trump to demonstrate to him and to his voters that they will do absolutely everything in their power, whether it is advised or not, to show their loyalty to him. But then we also have to remember that this, whatever happens tomorrow, sets a precedent. And one of the things we've seen over 4 years is that every single norm-bending activity sets a precedent, and people become used to that behavior. And so tomorrow's activities are as important to the 2024 presidential election, the 2028 presidential election, maybe the 2040 presidential election, if that's a presidential election year, because what they do tomorrow will give tacit permission to people in the future to undertake the same shenanigans.
Now, there's been speculation about President Trump's motives in his ongoing rejection of the election outcome, saying, well, maybe he's really trying to overturn it, or maybe this is kind of a fundraising thing, a way to stay in the spotlight. Now we have the call, the recording of the call in Georgia coming out to the Secretary of State. It seems genuinely that President Trump is seeking avenues to change the election outcome. Is that a fair reading, do you think?
Yes, I do think it is a fair reading. I do think it is also a fair reading to suggest that this is a massive fundraising ploy on the part of both the president and members of the Senate who have engaged in a lot of fundraising. And figures that have been reported to date show that $0 that have been raised have been spent on the Georgia Senate races, which has been the assumed purpose of that fundraising at this point. But if you listen to the call that the president had with the Secretary of State of Georgia on Saturday, it is easy to believe that he truly has been told enough times things that support his view that he did not lose the election, that he truly has come to believe that.
People have raised, and neither of us is a lawyer, people have raised legal concerns about the president's call to the Secretary of State saying he is soliciting election fraud in this case. Do you expect anybody in the political system to pursue something like that?
Well, I honestly wouldn't hazard a guess at this point, in part because what I have read since Saturday, election lawyers say that it's pretty clear that in both asking for a manipulation of vote totals and overtly threatening the Secretary of State, suggesting that if he doesn't do what the president wants, then he himself then engages in illegal behavior. Both of those things are, you know, probably violations. The degree to which the president could be prosecuted for them or any person could be prosecuted is unclear because there seem to be all sorts of, you know, limitations as to the kind of evidence you might need to demonstrate that the law had been violated. We can assume that, you know, prosecutors in the state of Georgia or whether it would be federal jurisdiction might be attentive to the political issues as well as the legal issues. So, I mean, it's certainly not clear to us at this point whether anything would happen.
We're talking to Kathleen Dolan, professor of political science at UW-Milwaukee, talking about the politics around the Georgia runoff races and the upcoming Electoral College count tomorrow before Congress. Challenges from Republicans in both chambers expected. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want to see Republicans making this move tomorrow, challenging some of the electors from particular swing states when the votes come before Congress? Why? What do you want to see happen? And what political issues are at the front of your mind as we head into 2021? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Kathleen Dolan, Distinguished Professor of Political Science at UW-Milwaukee, talking to her about what's at stake in the Georgia Senate runoffs and the upcoming review of the Electoral College ballots before Congress tomorrow. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. How do you see the Democratic and Republican parties changing in the coming years in reaction to what we saw over the last year? Do you see President-elect Joe Biden facing an uphill battle to push forward his policies? What are you watching for in Georgia? And what do you think of expected challenges to electors in Congress tomorrow from some Republicans in the House and Senate? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Jimmy is with us in Valley Junction. Jimmy, hello.
Afternoon. Yeah, I say give them a real show. I say the Democrats should object to all the states that Trump carried, and let's go have a two-hour discussion on each one of the states and show them just how ridiculous it all looks. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Jimmy, thanks for the call. Kathleen, I don't think Democrats are talking about doing that, at least not publicly. What have you seen from the Democrats and their response to these challenges to the November outcome?
Well, most of what we've heard from the Democrats and then from the Republicans who also don't support what's likely to happen tomorrow is the idea that people who make objections to the Electoral College slates from any particular state have a responsibility to present evidence. And since there is no evidence that has been presented at any point in the process, whether in the run-up to tomorrow's counting or in any of the 62 court cases that have been filed around the country, there is nothing clear here except the politics and the theatrics of it. So Democrats do not believe that there was widespread voter fraud. They believe all of the administration elections officials, you know, very clear evidence that it was among the most secure elections we've ever had. So Democrats are asking for Republicans to take the responsible step to provide evidence. But other than that, the Democrats are, you know, perfectly comfortable with the results.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Archie joins us next in Milwaukee. Archie, hello.
Good afternoon. How the heck are you?
Good. What do you want to bring up, Archie?
Well, I am curious. I would like to hear the definition of sedition, because it's been a term that's been thrown around with some frequency, and along with that, sedition and treason. I would like to know what the definition is. And secondly, I would like to hear our guests' thoughts on how this process does set a precedent in future elections.
Archie, thanks a lot for that call. Kathleen, yeah. I don't know if you want to get into the nuance of sedition and treason.
Well, sure. I mean, we can just sort of kind of quickly define them. Sedition is what we think about as speech or behavior that is undertaken by people to incite some sort of rebellion, or we've heard the word coup used a lot. And so some people are saying that tomorrow's behavior will be essentially calling for some sort of rebellion against the system as it is established and as it is supposed to play out. Treason is a little different in that it is a crime that is defined as taking actions to betray one's country. So it could involve trying to overthrow the system. It could be the assassination of a leader. It could be compromising intelligence or sharing intelligence with an enemy power. So there, you know, are lots of behaviors that could be seen as treasonous. And so that's a slight definition there. And I'm sorry, I'm going to have to ask you just to recap
The second part I was hoping you would expand on the precedent setting here. And I did want to talk about that a little more, because I think back, like with the Senate, you know, the Democrats get rid of the filibuster for some court appointments, and the Republicans get rid of it for Supreme Court appointments. And they could point, well, you guys did this, we're going to do this. like, can we see, expect this kind of back and forth? Well, Republicans did this, so in 10, 12 years, Democrats will do this.
Well, yes. And what you raise is sort of a common problem in our system. I mean, the Congress, the House of Representatives is a place where majority rule is very clearly the norm. And the Senate is a place where we see majority rule, but with significant minority rights. And so one of the problems that we've had over the last 15 years or so is when a party is in the majority, they can be stymied by members of the minority with relative ease. And so majority party members have recently taken behaviors to try to limit minorities. But then elections happen, and people in a majority one day could become the minority party after an election. So the limitations on the filibuster are an excellent example of that, where Democrats instituted changes in the filibuster that helped them at the time because they were in the majority. But then when they assumed minority status, they were sad that they no longer had those levers of power at their disposal. So there's always the, you know, which party am I and am I in power at any particular time as part of this issue? With regard to the precedent this sets, so if you just think out the fact that, you know, let's say that the House of Representatives we know is Democratic right now in the 117th Congress. Let's just say that the Republicans can keep control of the Senate after today's elections in Georgia. And so we have a Democratic president, a Democratic House, and a Republican Senate. We will have midterm elections in 2022, which could change the majority status in either of those houses, right? The majority status and control of Congress can change every 2 years. And so what would happen if we move into a world in 2024 where we might have both chambers of Congress controlled by one party, but a president of the other party having been elected? Does what will happen tomorrow set a precedent for a party to say, huh, you know, we didn't have majority control of both chambers of Congress last time, but we do now. And then maybe if we challenge Electoral College votes and we control both chambers of Congress, maybe we can make this work this time. So given how frequently we have elections in the United States, given how party status can change, some people have expressed concern that this could become a routine way that we joust and perhaps alter the system that we have. And I think it is fair to say that it falls into, I mean, it's perhaps the most egregious example of, but it falls into the category of norm-shattering behaviors that President Trump has led our country down for the last 4 years.
Well, is there a way to get the horses back in the barn here? Can we re-normalize our system, maybe firm up the rules to take out some of the little wiggle room that people are trying to exploit?
Well, you know, there has been talk. And so the Electoral College Act, which was passed in 1887, which is the guiding law here, that law was passed in part because the Constitution didn't anticipate challenges to Electoral College slates. So that law was passed when a defect in the Constitution was found, or not a defect, perhaps, but a blind spot. And so now some people say, given that we are in 2020, maybe a law passed in 1887 could be updated and modernized. And that is certainly possible, but it is unlikely to work in a situation if today we if we end up after the Georgia election with the two chambers being held by the two parties. Then any sort of reform to the elections, particularly the ECA, are unlikely.
I want to spend a little bit looking here in Wisconsin at some of the response. Of course, we've talked about on the show Senator Ron Johnson saying he's going to support the challenges. We see figures like maybe most notably Paul Ryan, former House Speaker from Wisconsin, saying, no, this is not a conservative thing to do. This is a radical step. How significant do you see voices like Paul Ryan's and a number of others currently and formerly in the legislature saying, no, let's not set this precedent?
Well, you know, I certainly think that it was a brave and principled stand by former Speaker Ryan to say what he did the other day, because he knows in doing so it puts him at odds with one of the senators from his own state, with other Republicans here in the state and nationally as well. But I think for every Republican, you know, whether they are in office currently, you know, somebody who retains the status that former Speaker Ryan does in the party, it is a calculation, right, based on what do they value the most? Do they value holding to what are, as the speaker said, you know, typical conservative traditional values of not overriding elections of the people? Or are there individuals who are taking the positions they do because there is some political calculation they've made? And so somebody like Senator Johnson, you would find it hard to believe that he truly believes that states should be overridden when Congress believes it, because not a month ago he said that the election was relatively free and fair and President-elect Biden was the victor. So then you have to ask yourself, for Republicans like that, is there some political calculation they're making that causes them to take the president's side on this issue?
Kathleen, we'll leave it there. Thanks a lot for joining us again.
Oh, happy to be here.
Kathleen Dolan is a distinguished professor of political science at UW-Milwaukee. She talked to us about the Senate races in Georgia and what to expect out of tomorrow's count of the Electoral College's votes in the presidential election.